Again, hello everyone. Well, we have quite packed agenda for today, even though it doesn't look very long. It's really very heavy. As you know from our email exchange, we're hoping to send you a new version of the first draft for rejection action procedure. It's a guideline. We had several discussions on that, and there is a new version. It hasn't been sent to you, but Stephen was ready. I hope he, after breakfast, he is ready to present it to you so that you understand the general structure, some ideas that are crafted into the document, so it can be easier for you to read it. Okay, Stephen, are you ready? Can you give us a brief intro? By brief, I mean not longer than 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Stephen, please unmute if you're still there.
Unmuting is helpful. I've got a short slide deck to just give an overview of the rejection action stuff and a quick overview of the guideline itself, and then I thought I'd just skim through the guideline and point out what each section was as an introduction, so when you guys start reading it, your head doesn't explode on that. next slide. So rejection actions, what are they? Under the new bylaws, the empowered community has the opportunity to reject some things that the board does. There are 10 specific things in all, but the three examples are fairly, you know, typical of what it can do, basically. So if the board makes a change to one of them, and budgets, of course, change every year, so there'll be an annual rejection action possibility against the ICANN budget and the IANA budget, et cetera. The board is obligated to send what's known as rejection action board notice to the empowered community. Upon receipt of that, we then have an opportunity to object to their action and block it. Next slide. So the question with rejection actions is, how do they work? Basically, an SOAC member, in our case a CCTLD or even a regional organization, can file what's known as rejection action petition with the CCNSO Council. And there's specific criteria for what needs to be in that petition. And of course, there are many, many time frames that are set up to keep the process moving along, shall we say. Council then reviews it to see that it meets bylaw mandated criteria, then council then votes on whether to accept it. And if council votes to accept it, then the council needs to go out and look for a second SOAC to also support it. A rejection petition has to have the support of at least two SOACs. And at the end of the day, in order to even be considered by the empowered community, at the end of the day, it needs majority support from the SOACs to actually reject what ICANN's done, whatever that action is. Next, please. So the takeaway with rejection petitions is that it does take two to tango because you need multiple supporters. You've got the SOAC that's come up with the rejection petition, and then they have to go out and find somebody else who's willing to also champion that rejection petition. As noted, the timeframes detailed in the rejection action-related bylaws are very tight. They're very, very tight. And if anything goes awry in the process stops, and as I describe it, quote, ICANN wins, unquote. And the way the CCNO conducts its business further complicates things, because we're somewhat slow and deliberative. We have, you know, have to give forward notice of meetings, and then there's the post-CCNSO decision-making, et cetera, preview period, et cetera. So the upshot, it's going to be very difficult for the empowered community, not just for the CCNSO, to ever actually exercise its power over ICAM. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't, like, have something in place to try to do so if ICAM does something that we feel is egregious. So that's the point of the guideline. Next, please. So the question of how to handle a rejection action petition depends on whether or not it's originated within the CCNSO or whether it's originated with another SOAC and they've come to us and asked us for our support. The procedure is similar yet dissimilar, and the timelines involved in the two activities are slightly different. And I can't speak, and this vocabulary is extremely daunting. If we initiate a petition, council approves the member's petition, and we put it forward to the community and seek the support of another SOAC, we're referred to as rejection action petitioning decisional participant. And if instead another SOAC puts one forward and come to us to support it and we agree to support it, then we're referred to as rejection action supporting decisional participant. It's crazy. Next slide. For both types of rejection actions, there will be two votes of the council required. The first vote is on whether to accept the rejection action petition from within our community. And with regards of another SOAC, we have to asking us for our support, the first vote of council on that pathway is to agree whether or not to support the petition we've been asked to support by the other SOAC. The second vote, and again this applies to both types of situations, is at the end of the whole process, after the public forums, the telephone conference calls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, as there can be multiple of each. We go into a period known as rejection action period, decision period. And this is when the SOACs have to make up their mind about this rejection petition. And that vote would be the vote of council either to support it or not support it or abstain. So there are three outs on that. And a slight tweaking of the CCNSO rules regarding how the council operates is going to be required to make this possible for us to actually have a chance to be effective in this rejection process. Next one? Do I have a next one? Yes, brief overview of the guidelines. Guideline is, I'm afraid, somewhat complicated. There are six major sections, two timelines where I try to map out and make some sense of all the various cutoffs from one step to the next. And there are two appendices that still need to be written. One is going to be a glossary, and the other is going to be a checklist-type form so that a community member who wants to file a rejection petition is in a position to go to this guideline, look at that form, and make sure all the boxes are checked off so he files a valid petition that meets ICAM's criteria. Otherwise, the petition cannot be accepted by the ECA. Parts that are also familiar. Most of our guidelines have the introduction and background section, purpose of the guideline section, general provisions, miscellaneous stuff, and then that crazy table at the back called roles and responsibilities assignment. As I say on the slide, it's the last 6 to 9 pages in the middle that are a bit complicated. And with that, I'm happy to walk you through an overview of the guideline. I don't think we need to get into the really nitty-gritty of the, of the language at this point. I just want to point out kind of what each section, the purpose of each section, so that when you guys do start to read it, you'll have some idea of what the intent is on that. So, Kim, if you could go to the table of contents. As you can see, the first bit is familiar 1, 2, and 3. The meat of it's in 4. Section 4.3.1 handles rejection action petitions that originate within our community. Section 4.3.2 describes what the CCNSO needs to do when they're approached by another SOAC requesting support for their rejection petition. Next one and the one after. Next one. And then after the miscellaneous and rules and responsibilities, I've got the two timelines stuck in there, the glossary and the rejection action petition certification checklist. So if we could go to the next one. Okay, this should look familiar. Introduction, background, self-explanatory. We enumerate the 10 things that are 10 activities of the board that are subject to rejection action petitions. So just for completeness. Next one, please. Purpose is there. General provisions there. Now, what we've done, similar to what the CCNSO did with the ECA, is rather than have the chair manage this process, we've elected to have the council appoint from within the council a rejection action manager so that there's one individual that's kind of the focal point of all this and is not burdened with all the other stuff the chair has to do, for example. And that person is known as Rejection Action Manager. 3.2 explains how that happens. Feeling is it's a one-year term beginning at the conclusion of the A-format meeting as per our usual terms of service. Next, please. We detail here the obligations of the Rejection Action Manager. There are more, but that's a start. When we receive, when CCNSO receives a rejection petition from the community, it needs to be reviewed and what I call certified so that it meets all the criteria outlined in Annex D for a successful petition. Because if it doesn't meet the criteria outlined in Annex D, when the petition is forwarded by the CCNSO to the entire community administration, the ECA will reject it. So the thought was, rather than have the rejection action manager be the sole arbiter of does this thing meet the criteria or not, that we would set up a small three-person group consisting of the rejection action manager and two council members formed as what I'm calling in this the Rejection Action Petition Review Committee. And they can, the three of them can get together and you know, make the determination as to whether or not a rejection petition that we've received passes muster. Communication just says we like email. Next, please. Okay. This is where things start to get interesting. Because of the timelines involved, we have to be nimble. There's some rejection petitions that we know will come around year in and year out, a rejection petition board notice, rather, that will come in and year out because every year ICANN, you know, has a different IANA budget, has a different ICANN budget. They may tweak the PTI some manner, shape, or form for some reason, et cetera, et cetera. The process, this whole rejection process begins with the receipt of the rejection action board notice. And 4.2 describes what's supposed to happen there. And then in 4.3 is where we start getting into, so 4.1 and 4.2 cover basically the over stuff. 4.3 is where things start to get interesting. 4.3.1 is the section that details what has to happen when someone within our community submits a rejection action petition. Next slide, please. As you can see here, I've enumerated most of what needs to be in a rejection petition for it to pass muster with the ECA. The citations are to Annex B and Section 6, et cetera, Section 10 of the ICANN bylaws as applicable. So you can always go back and reference what the actual mother text says with regards to that stuff. After receipt of the rejection action petition, then it gets reviewed and certified or not certified in 43.13. Next, please. If it's certified, then we go into what I'm calling the solicitation and community feedback. And the purpose of this, and it's a short period, it's just a short period of 7 days, is to let the CCNSO community know, hey, one of our members filed a rejection petition. We think it passes muster. What do you guys think about it? Because council has to vote soon on whether or not to accept it. So that's the purpose of that. 4.3.1.5 below it describes how the council will handle the vote on whether to accept the rejection petition. And this is that first vote that was in the slide deck that I talked about earlier. Next, please. If the council decides to accept this petition and put it forward, then the council's got to go out and find support from another SOAC, and that's described in 4.3.1.6 and 4.3.1.7. There's only a week allowed for that, so it's pretty tricky. And 3.1.7 details support, getting what we do with the support for the from the other decisional participants. Next, please. It's in all likelihood any rejection action petition that comes forward that gets a second SOAC support and passes muster with the ECA will no doubt trigger a public community forum on that rejection petition, so that's covered there as well. There's also a provision in Annex D which needs to be in our procedure, which is outlined in 4.3.1.9, wherein at any point in this process, the CCNSO Council can decide, we really don't want to do this after all, and can rescind their prior vote to accept and push forward the rejection petition. That's a rejection action support petition. Okay, next, please. 4.3.1.11 describes the procedure, which is explicitly stated in Annex D as to what the CCNSO needs to do to convey its decision, whether it's to support the rejection action petition, to oppose it, or to abstain from a decision on it. And if there's any irregularity with that procedure, then the ECA is required by the bylaws to count the vote of the CCNSO as an abstention. Now describes, so that's it for when we get a rejection action petition from within our community. 4.3.2 describes what the CCNSO needs to be doing when it's approached by another SOAC looking for our support for their rejection action petition. 4.3.2.1, and let me say at the outset that when I got near the end of this, I realized that what's described in here works if during the course of events, the originating SOAC, that is the SOAC that files the rejection action petition from their community member does so on the last day that they can do so. I've got to go back and take a look at how to generalize this a little bit. So this scenario assumes that the petition is filed on the last day, and that's pretty typical with public comments on issues that ICANN puts out for public comments, that nobody really comments until the last couple hours. So I would expect to see that behavior extend to this arena as well. And if so, then this works as is. Otherwise, I got to tweak a little bit. Anyway, in 4321, given that there will be two council meetings required to vote on any rejection action petition put forth by any SOAC, if we're approached by the petitioning SOAC, then there will be two votes scheduled, and 4321 just says, okay, we know they're coming, we know when we need to do them, let's schedule those CCNSO meetings now, and just set them for that date. And it describes the purpose, et cetera, et cetera. Next, please. Okay, 4.3.2.2 is the whole receipt of the request from the other SOAC that wants our support. 4.3.2.3, again, a short solicitation period to receive feedback from our community as to what they think of the other SOAC's rejection action petition, to provide some guidance to council as they come up to their vote on whether or not to support the other SOAC. It's a very short period, it's 3 days. And then 4.3.2.4 describes the council decision in some detail. Next, please. And then 4.3.2.5, just as in the other section, describes how CCNSO needs to notify ICANN that they have indeed elected to support the other SOAC and become a rejection action supporting decisional participant. And these requirements, if not met, result in failure of the rejection action petition. 4.2.3.6 describes the role of the CCNSO in its supporting role for the other SOAC. Describes what we need to do for the Rejection Action Community Forum. I'm sorry about that. Rejection requests. Yes, okay, so that details that. Next, please. As with a rejection action petition that originates within our community, the CCNSO has provision capability under the bylaws to change its mind about supporting rejection action petition of the other SOAC. And so 4.3.2.7 just says, hey, we can change your mind, and here's how we do it. 4.3.2.8 is the setup for the second CCNSO council meeting, where the final decision as to whether or not we agree with the rejection action petition at hand. It's entirely possible that CCNSO won't be asked by, say, the GNSO. Instead, the GNSO will go ask ALAC for their support on something that GNSO is upset about. And in that case, there's really only one council meeting needed, and that's this one, because at the end of the day, even though the CCNSO has really had no involvement with the rejection action petition, at the end of the day, we as a decisional participant need to make a decision about it. Next, please. And again, this is the ground rules for how this stuff needs to be said. The decision of council needs to be conveyed to the empowered community administration and any muck up here results in an abstention being recorded by the ECA. Next, please. That was the hard part. The rest of this is pretty straightforward. Miscellaneous stuff as we've had before. Mission, publication, blah, blah. Next, please. This is the famous roles and responsibilities assignment matrix. As you can see, it needs a little work. I'm not even sure how to begin to fill this out for this particular guideline, but I'll give it some thought. Next, please. This is the first of two timelines, and what I've tried to capture here is, in this instance, what the CCNSO deadlines are with respect to the CCNSO as a decisional participant. On your left, I have total number of elapsed days, and then the next column is days within a specific action. So this is so small, I have to go look at my sheet. Bear with me a sec. So the whole process gets triggered when the board notifies the empowered community that a rejection action board notification is coming its way, and it's known as the rejection action board notification date. It gets delivered, and the process starts at day zero. There then is like a 21-day rejection action petition period, which is defined in the in Annex D. And then over on the right, I'm trying to capture what CCNSO and CCTLD community needs to do. And so far, it looks like we've got 7 days to submit a rejection petition. And then I gave the Rejection Action Petition Review Committee 4 days to review it, 1 day to certify it, and then I have a 4-day solicitation period that takes us through day 15. And next, please. The process continues. You can see in bold on line day 21, CCNSO Council decides whether or not to accept the rejection petition. And then other activities carries on. And next, please. And it carries on, and it carries on. And eventually we get to a point where the CCN deadline, the deadline is on day 63 of the process for the CCNSO Council to decide on the rejection petition under discussion. At that point, we have the usual 7-day community council review period. And at the end of that 7-day, assuming there's been no rejection, then the CCNSO Council decision is finalized, and it is transmitted to the Empowered Community Administration. I think this is right. It's pretty close to being right. But again, it's built on that structural notion that the rejection action petition won't be filed until the last day that a rejection action petition can be filed. Next, please. Next. This is the same thing, only I'm trying to capture what and when the CCNSO has to do in their role as a supporting decisional participant, that is when they've been asked by another SOAC to support their rejection action petition. And it's the same structure as the previous one. Next, please. There's not much to say about it. The meetings are scheduled in bold. Next, please. Next. Now, before I talk about the glossary, you may have noticed on those spreadsheets, those timelines, that the first council meeting, that is the one to accept rejection action petition from within the community or to agree to support a rejection action petition from another SOAC, did not have space for the 7-day council decision review. And as a result, and the reason that is because if we put that in there, we can't play in this arena. The timelines in Annex B simply don't allow us to run things the usual way. So that first meeting, whether it's for a petition originating within our community or request for support from another community, is not subject to the 7-day review. And this is going to require a bit of a tweak on the CCNSO rules. But the second one, where the actual final decision is made, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, with regards to the rejection action petition under discussion, that one, as you saw in the timelines, is subject to the usual CCNSO review procedures. So that's a compromise that I made on trying to get this to work. Appendix A will be a glossary of all the crazy vocabulary that is used in the document in Section 4. Where there's an ICANN definition for a term, I will use it. There's some terms that are unique to this document, and I will be providing those as well, so it should be useful. I did one for the approval guideline, but it never made it into the guideline, so I will resurrect that and get that going. Next, please. I think we're done. This will be, as I said in the slide deck presentation, this will be a checklist of things that have to be in rejection action petition. As an aid to our community, if they want to file a rejection action petition, they can go to this and go, okay, in order to do this, I need to get this thing in, I need to have this thing in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that I'll put together. I'll get that out soon. I want to work on the appendix next, though. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stephen. You managed to keep it under 45 minutes indeed. One immediate comment from me about Appendix B. I suggest that we have a template for a rejection action and checklist to be part of it.
Yeah, that's based on our discussion to Blisi, that's going to be essentially what this is.
Yeah, so but just let's call it a template and checklist is just a part of it. So thank you very much. Well, as you can see, this is just really monumental work and a masterpiece created by Stephen. And if there are any questions, you will have this document in your mailbox shortly. Now, after this excellent intro, any questions?
I would like to say that this document benefited greatly from readings, reviews by Ben, by David McCauley, by Bart, and by Katrina. So they get some of the glory and some of the pain.
Yeah, well, it is painful indeed. Yeah. So David.
Good morning, Katrina and Stephen. David McCauley here for the transcript. First of all, great thanks to Stephen for both the approval and for this. This is an amazing thicket of information, and to plow through it is really commendable. And I just wanted to comment and say thank you, too, for the idea of the glossary and the checklist. I think the checklist, Appendix B, when it's done, is going to be like a template, as Katrina said, and hopefully that'll be the kind of a document that might be a good orientation document for new members to the council, because it seems to me that it should be our hope that this not just be a guideline that sits on the shelf, but that as people come onto the council, they get an appreciation for just how complicated this particular area is and how short the timelines are, and so that they'll be predisposed to moving quickly. God only knows what's going to happen with a rejection action that comes up between the middle of July and the middle of September. But it looks to me like Appendix B will serve a number of purposes, including orientation. So many thanks to Stephen, and that's my comment.
Good. Are there any comments on the structure of this thing?
Yeah, and those who comment will be forced to rewrite the document. So think before you propose anything. Okay, no, really, any questions? Any, Bart, please.
Yes, maybe Stephen, and especially for those who see this document for the first time, if you could comment first on the structure itself. So I know I've seen already some potential areas for a little bit of restructuring, but I think people will need to have time to digest what is in the proposed guideline, because it's very complex. So if the others on the working group could propose or submit their comments, send them to the list first on the structure itself, and then on the substance, and then on the timing, whether they think it's feasible, I think it's easier to consolidate it again and have a discussion next time. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so
I do not claim
if there are no
errors.
Yeah, that's why we're here. We will all use next 2 weeks to go through the doc. Please read it carefully. Think about and think about implementation, how to implement that. That goes. Not everything that looks good on paper will be feasible and really realistic during implementation. So please think. Also about those people who will have to implement the thing.
Katrina,
so,
just summarized deep, beautifully.
Yeah, well, on the contrary, this was a very heavy critique of Appendix B. So it clearly people who wrote it never thought it through, or if they did, then they did a very good job. So make things easier for ICANN. Not for us, unfortunately. Okay, so thank you. With that, let's move to next agenda item. Is there any progress, David?
Sorry, Katrina, I was stuck on mute. I have been out of the office, and I'm sorry?
Yeah. No, this actually, sorry, this was the wrong, I wrongly attributed it to you, because this is the guideline that I submitted, but since it said IPR, IPR is not IRC. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry,
I was
gonna... David, yeah, you were out, and you were not on the... Sorry. It's not morning here, but still mixed it up. Yeah, so this is a guideline about this IANA IPR Community Coordination Group. This is one of the groups that were created together with new bylaws. I think this group is not in the bylaws. I do not remember. It's from the bylaws, but... the idea of this group is to have a community representative who would take care and look after IANA IPRs. So we needed this guideline 2 years ago, but one year ago. But we did not have time to prepare it, so the council appointed Martin Simon as our representative without any guideline. Now he got reappointed. This is relatively relatively easy guideline. I used the ARZER guideline, and this one is even simpler than ARZER guideline. As you can see, I don't know if that's scrollable for everyone or just for me, but we don't have much. We don't have much of requirements here, but so you can scroll it. simple selection criteria. The most important things are we need familiarity and strong understanding of the work of the IAM stewardship group and some understanding of the work as it relates to the IANA intellectual property rights. It's not a requirement, but it's good if the person has some intellectual property expertise or experience, but that is required if the person would like to stand as a co-chair of the CCG. So really a simple guideline. Yeah, good to have it. If not, all the council just will have to appoint Martin again. Thanks to Martin that he agreed to be on this group. So this group is not active. I think during the past year they didn't have to do a thing. The most important part for them is if something goes wrong, then they are supposed to react. There are no any charters to the group, no known requirements to the members, just something that was initially put in writing by Jonathan Robinson as something that is very desirable for people on this group. So, okay, that's a very short intro. Please have a look, and I hope we can move rather swiftly and quickly with this one because it's a simple thing. Any questions? If not, thank you. Let's move forward. Next one is an update on the council election guidelines. So as you know, we posted it to the CCNSO members list asking for feedback. I know that there have been, there are some questions from Pablo. I don't know if he could send them. So my question to the secretariat, any feedback, any comments from the community, anything?
I have received none.
Okay. So, Kim, could you comment on Pablo? If there are any, if we have received questions, maybe.
Hi, Katrina. This is Kim. Pablo just asked how he should make his comments, whether he should make it to the Liz, to the secretariat, to you directly. This was right before Maria hit, and we haven't heard anything back since.
Yeah. So, well, actually, Pablo could comment even when the document was sent to the council. Yeah, that's a, well, that's a good question. So what should we do? Probably we should wait for some couple of weeks for Pablo to give him opportunity to provide some comments and questions on this one. But otherwise, I think this is, if we do not receive any comments from Pablo, I think we can move and ask the council to adopt the guideline during its next meeting. Yeah, next meeting is in October. Okay, that one, that's good. Now, next one. Now, next one is update on the discussion on this ICANN-specific review in key operating standards. As you know, we have developed guideline to deal with appointments to the specific review teams long before, okay, not long, but before ICANN did any move. And we were looking for the operating standards, which are actually, I think it's a requirement to have operating standards. It's a requirement in the bylaws. But for some reason, only now ICANN is planning to publish the first draft. Sometime in early October, first week of October, they did not give an exact date, but first week of October, whatever it means. Last week there was a call during which I briefed SOAC chairs on the developments around specific reviews. Okay, not only SOAC chairs, there was also a board committee that is responsible for specific reviews. Kim, if you could make me a presenter, I could change the slides myself. I'll just briefly go through this document for you to know. Okay, if you cannot make me the presenter, I could may I ask to change the slide then? I'll try to. Okay, what can we do? Please either make me a presenter or change the slide. Okay, something is wrong here clearly. Okay, then I'll try to open it on my computer.
Katrina, I've changed the slide, objective and agenda.
So I will try to give you some more details about the process. As you may remember, in our guideline, we kind of expected that we are the ones who launch calls for volunteers. In practice, it's ICANN that does that, and they also ask people who apply apparently I'm not the presenter, but okay, maybe I am. Yes, so this is slide four, and in slide four you can see the process, how it works. So each organization, ICANN launches call for volunteers, then volunteers apply, and they indicate the SOAC for which they are looking for endorsement. And then the SOAC, according to their own internal process, they select one, two, three, and more representatives, and then SOAC chairs end up look into the slate, and they decide whether to go with the number of people appointed or extend it the team up to 21 people. But that's a very short process. It's rather straightforward. The problem is, they indicated several observed issues. Even though the requirement is to have a diverse team, still the team is required to do the work, and it's not quite clear how to balance skills and diversity. And currently, the chairs are discussing this issue, and it looks like we will agree and convince ICANN that if diversity for selection of the members to the team, then we shouldn't add some additional requirement of diversity to already diverse process. So to illustrate it, in case of the Seasoning Cell Council, is a really diverse group of people. All five regions are equally represented. We have small, big registries. We have all possible. We have gender diversity. We have we have all the diversity possible. So, and if we select democratically select members of the RT review team, then diversity already is hardcore into the process itself. And currently, Spain will go with other OSPs. They also use a very they are diverse and also use this process to select the best. Another one is about the scope of the work. It's really it is a hot topic, actually. And as you may know or remember, during the when the WHOIS or RDS team was formed, we the system and so actually deferred its participation in the work because again, no operating standard defined. No scope for the group was defined, and currently the group struggles with defining the scope for their work. And actually, 2 weeks ago, I spoke to one guy who applied to the RDS, who is the review team, and okay, he was selected, not by our he was selected to the team, and actually he's quite shocked that clearly not what he expected from this group. Alan Greenberg, who's the chair of this RDS review team, he also said that now, as the chair of the group, he realizes that the scope must be defined before we appoint volunteers to the team. So that is something that we indicated and we insisted on a long time ago, a year ago to be precise. Problems with volunteers and unclear expectations because of the lack of clarity around the reviews. What else? Something that is, since applicants can indicate any SOSC they want to endorse them, then sometimes they just choose something out of thin air. So SOSC and SC need to endorse them, they no clue who those persons are. I think I'll move forward. I'll go back. Something that is that was James Bladel, the chair of the GNSO, he pointed out that it's quite difficult. On one side, we want new people to apply because we have problems with volunteers. On the other hand, we really would like to select those people who know what they're doing. It was somewhere here, but I won't find it. Two observations, but they're kind of contradicting each other. This is just I won't go through all the issues that have been identified, but what is really relevant to our group, as you can see on this slide, in October they really hopes to publish a draft of operating standards. And for that, they use some existing practice and try to put together everything that's already been discussed and from the written. And as you understand, we will, we as a group, will need to read the draft and propose for changes before. I expect this is a very important document, and I'm sure that with our experience, our approach to things, we really need to provide our feedback on this. So please be ready for this document. Any questions? Any comments on this one? Yeah, I know I ran through this because we're already pretty close to 1 hour, but if you have something you want to say, yeah, so please use this opportunity. Okay, if no questions, then any other business? I have something for. I have. Kim, could you please open the document for a work plan for October? I sent it to you. So as we discussed some time ago, I think during the last previous call, it would be good to have some work plan for October. So currently, I prepared one. New drafts expected in October, so guidelines about IANA, IPR, Community Coordination Group, already submitted. Customer Standing Committee Charter Review Procedure. I don't know, I put it here because it was something we identified as lacking some time ago. Probably it's not for October, but maybe we need something like that. Bart, your comments are most welcome because, as you can see, I put you as the one responsible for that. And then, of course, the monumental work on rejection actions. Stephen, and it definitely will be submitted. Then we have still two documents under development from previous months. It's a guideline on decisions of council roles and responsibilities. We need to finalize it. And CCNSO travel funding guideline. Then for public comments, it'd be good to send those two currently in draft, at least those two, maybe even we manage to send something else. And one that is already ready for, almost ready for adoption by the CCNSO Council, that's the CCNSO Council election procedure. So, any comments? What do you think about the work plan? Yes, there's a Google Docs with all the... actually, I think we should put this on Google Docs and just keep an eye on the work plan Or maybe let's put it on Wiki so that we can see everybody else can see. So I propose we put it on Wiki, not on Google Docs. Yes. So, we will put it on Wiki, and if you have any ideas what else to add here, just let me know. Alejandro likes the work plan. That's good. I like when the work is done, not when it's planned. But planning is good too, I agree. So that was for any other business. Any other business? Anything you'd like to add? Ask, comment on? Contribute to the monument?
Right,
you could rate for Stephen?
Ending right on time.
No. Okay. So thank you very much for being on the call. Next one is in 2 weeks. Let me check the date. It's going to be October 9th. Hope that everybody can make it. And with that, let me close the call. Thank you again for being on this call, and see you online and offline and on the call in 2 weeks. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, all. Thanks.